I, as I imagine most of you, can recall exactly where I was and what I was doing on September the 11th, 2001, as we watched with horror the hijacked airliners crashing into the World Trade Center in New York and the Pentagon in Washington, D.C., and as we listened to the report of the fourth plane that crashed before reaching its target. We watched in disbelief as the buildings burned, hundreds of people leaped to their death, and then the collapse of the Twin Towers as floor after floor after floor came crashing down on the one below until those once soaring structures lay in a cloud of dust and smoke. Nearly 3,000 people died that day in an attack by Islamic extremists. That day changed the world. And one thing in particular that it changed was America's perception of Islam. I had at the time been a pastor for 20 years, and I knew Islam was a false religion, a false world religion, but I'd never studied it in detail or even really given it a second thought. I didn't know, for instance, that there are over 1 billion Muslims in the world. I didn't know that while Islam started in the Arab nations, that today Arabs make up only a minority of Muslims, and that there are Muslims in every nation, language, and people group, pretty much. I didn't know about the violent history of Islam because I hadn't paid much attention to it. And while I was familiar with this particular prophecy, it hadn't dawned on me at that time that it deals with Islamic nations. All that changed on 9/11. Ezekiel chapters 38 and 39, in some respects, reads like today's newspaper. It speaks to us of an invasion of the nation of Israel. It is a future invasion led, interestingly, by Russia, but consisting mainly of Islamic nations that will come from all sides. Now, today, that statement, especially concerning Islamic nations, might not surprise many people, but if someone had made that statement, say, just 75 years ago, it really wouldn't have made much sense. In the first place, 75 years ago, there was no such thing as a nation of Israel. Did you realize that? Jewish people were scattered all over the world, and at that time were being rounded up and incarcerated and incinerated by the millions in Nazi death camps. At the same time, as one writer states, quote, none of the Islamic nations that are so dangerous today were even blips on the international radar screen, end quote. That's no longer true. There are today 1.2 billion Muslims in the world, or to better put it into perspective, about one out of every five people in the world is a Muslim. And regardless of the spin put on it by the media or politicians, Islam is not a peaceful religion, at least if it's practiced the way that its founder intended. Many of the Muslims that we encounter in America are more moderate, who choose to interpret the Quran, which is the holy book of Islam, in a somewhat less than literal manner. But if Islam is practiced following the life and the lead of Muhammad, the founder of Islam, it is a bloody religion which has always, always, always been spread by the edge of the sword. Of course, as a false religious system, designed and developed by Satan. Its goal is complete domination of the world. And so it demands the worship of its false god, Allah, by all people. Allah, by the way, folks, is not the God of the Bible. I hear people sometimes say, well, you know, we all worship the same God. No, we don't. And all you have to do is find a little bit about the teaching of Islam regarding the character and the nature of Allah, and you will understand that the God of Islam is not the God of the Bible. As a matter of fact, I think if you look out here in our rack, there may be some tracts, some pamphlets about that very thing. I would pick them up and read them. Now, the first thing that I want you to notice as we consider this impending Islamic invasion is the identity of the invaders, the invaders' identity. In the world today, and particularly in the Middle East, the stage is being set for this invasion. And all you have to do is watch the news or read the news. Some of the nations that are in the news just about every day are Iraq, Iran, Pakistan, Afghanistan, Lebanon, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Egypt, Israel. All of those except Israel, of course, are Islamic nations. And I think you'll be amazed as we move through these texts of Scripture and you see who God says is going to be included in this approaching assault on God's chosen people. So the first thing that we're going to do is to identify the nations who are involved. Look in chapter 38, verses 1 and 2. And the word of the Lord came to me, son of man, set your face against Gog of the land of Magog, the chief prince of Meshech and Tubal, prophesy against him. Now, the word Gog means literally prince or leader. And Magog is the land over which he rules. Later you see the term chief prince, which literally means, the better translation of that would be Prince of Rosh, which is how it's translated in the New American Standard, if you happen to have that. So let me read this to you with those corrections made. Son of man, set your face toward the prince of the land of Magog, the prince of Rosh, Meshech, and Tubal. Now that's what that verse says. Okay, let's identify these names. First of all, Rosh is an ancient name for Russia. And on that, most scholars agree, very little disagreement about that. But that's not the only evidence that we have. At least three times in chapters 38 and 39, we are told that the invaders will come from the far north. And you can find that in chapter 38, verses 6 and 15, and also chapter 39 and verse 2. Interestingly, if you take a globe and you draw a line from Jerusalem to the North Pole, you will pass almost right through the middle of Moscow. You might say, well, you know, I thought that this is going to be an Islamic invasion. It is, but it appears that it will be led or at least initiated by Russia. When the Soviet Union dissolved in 1991, Russia became like a mother bear robbed of her cubs, and she is desperately seeking to reexert her influence, especially in the five former Soviet republics, one of which is Ukraine, and that's certainly been in the news. We've seen Russia exerting its influence there in recent days. These five former Soviet republics in Central Asia, as well as in the Middle East, and has continued to develop close ties with Iran, and we'll see later what additional motivation that Russia has for its involvement in this. We'll see that next week. Now, so we saw that Rosh is an ancient name for Russia. Meshech and Tubal were in the area south of the Black and Caspian Seas in Ezekiel's day. These nations are in the modern country of Turkey, possibly parts of Russia and northern Iran. The most likely identification is provided by the Jewish historian Josephus, who said Magog founded the Magogians, thus named after him, but who by the Greeks are called the Scythians. Now, you may have heard of the Scythians. The ancient Scythians were a great nomadic tribe who inhabited the ancient territory of Central Asia, all across the southern part of ancient Russia. The descendants of Magog were the original inhabitants of the plateau of Central Asia. Today, the land of Magog is inhabited by the former Soviet republics of Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, and Tajikistan, and possibly even northern parts of modern Afghanistan. These nations have a combined population of 60 million, and they have one thing in common: Islam. During the Soviet occupation, they were forced to renounce their religion, but when the Soviet Union came crashing down in December of 1991, the people of Central Asia immediately re-embraced Islam. Over the last several years, Iran, Turkey, and Russia have each exerted influence and sought to develop closer ties to the nations of Central Asia. And the Bible teaches here that someday a great leader known as the Prince, or Gog, who may or may not be the Antichrist, will come from this part of the world, who will lead, who will weld together a coalition of nations that will attack Israel. Now you say, what do you mean it may or may not be the Antichrist? Well, there are a couple of scenarios. Some believe that, and some scholars that I highly respect believe that Gog is the end time Antichrist, and that certainly may be. Another scenario that we've talked about before is that this will be another leader who will go initially to attack the Antichrist because of a couple of things. One, because of what is perceived to be his weakness and failed leadership because of the destruction that has come upon the earth because of the plagues that have come from God, the judgments of God during the second 3.5 years of the tribulation and the Antichrist's inability to do anything about those things. And then another reason would be we talked about the fact that the Antichrist may be indeed a Muslim, but you remember at the midpoint of the tribulation, he's going to enter the temple at Jerusalem and he's going to claim to be God. And so the beast worship that is going to exist during the second 3.5 years of the tribulation is going to be a distortion, a corruption of Islam. And it may be that some of these Islamic nations are going to attack the Antichrist. Of course, when they get there and at that time Christ returns, they'll all turn their attention to battle Christ. But it's possible that this may be someone other than the Antichrist. All right, just to give you the scenarios there. All right. So number one is the invader's identity. Now let's talk about the invader's allies. And from now on, when I talk about the invaders, I'm going to be referring to all of these countries. Look in verses 5 and 6 there. Persia, Cush, and Put will be with them, all with shields and helmets, also Gomer and all its troops, and Beth-Togarmah from the far north, with all its troops, the many nations with you. Now, let's talk about some of these nations that are mentioned here. First of all, Persia. Ezekiel 38:5 lists Persia as one of the collaborators in this end-time alliance against Israel. The Persian Empire includes what is modern Iraq, but would be centered in Iran. According to God's word, then Iraq will eventually join with Russia, Turkey, the nations of Central Asia, and other allies yet to be mentioned to invade Israel, as will Iran. It's been known for years that Iran is a key supporter of Hezbollah, the so-called party of God, which has terrorized Israel. Reuters news agency stated, quote, although Iran funded and armed Hezbollah in the 1980s, it has insisted recently its support is mainly moral and political. However, many sources have said Iranian arms are being used against Israeli civilian and military targets, end quote. Since the September 11 terrorist attack on New York and Washington, D.C., Iran has taken center stage to bring Muslim and Arab nations together against Israel and the United States. In recent years, Iran has also been in the news, of course, because of their insistence on uranium enrichment and the development of nuclear technology, which could lead to the production of nuclear weapons. It's significant that when the United States warned Iran that their continued uranium enrichment could lead to military action by the United States, Iran's response was not a threat of aggression against the United States, but against Israel. An article in the Associated Press said, quote, Iran's first target would be Israel in any response to the U.S. attack, reinforcing Iranian president's past call for Israel to be wiped off the map. And this is from the former president of Iran, Ahmadinejad. This is a statement that he made. He said, we have announced that whenever America does make any mischief, the first place we target will be Israel. Now, there are also two North African nations mentioned in Ezekiel's list. They are Cush and Put. Now, the King James translates these Ethiopia and Libya. One of those is correct, the other is not. Cush, rather than referring to Ethiopia, refers to Sudan, the country that is just south of Egypt. And one would be hard-pressed to find a more rabid enemy of Israel and of the West today than the country of Sudan. In 1989, Sudan was immediately and totally converted to an Islamic military dictatorship by the National Islamic Front. Those who refused to be converted were executed, and as many as 2 million have died in that country as a result. Sudan supported Iraq during the Gulf War, gave refuge to Osama bin Laden, and became the rallying place, really, for every hardline Islamic organization imaginable. Now, Put, or Libya, is the land just to the west of Egypt. And Libya has long been a rogue state and a sponsor of international terror. While some other Muslim nations have offered at least token efforts toward resolving the Middle East crisis, Libya has refused to recognize Israel's right to exist. As a matter of fact, its longtime dictator, now deposed and dead, Muammar Gaddafi, hated Anwar Sadat, the former president or prime minister of Egypt, because he made peace with Israel, and intelligence sources indicated that it was Gaddafi who had him assassinated in 1981. The government of Libya has changed, of course, resulting from the ousting and killing of Gaddafi. But because of this prophecy, we can be certain that Libya will continue to be a radical Islamic state. And God says that it will be at the forefront of this invasion of Israel. Now, there are going to be some other nations that are going to be involved of this. And Ezekiel goes on and lists those. There is Gomer, you see in verse 6. Gomer was the first son of Japheth, the son of Noah, and you can find that in Genesis chapter 10, verses 2 and 3. Following the Tower of Babel, the descendants of Gomer first settled in southern Russia, but were later expelled and moved to the area we know today as Turkey. Another country that is mentioned here is Beth Togarma, also in verse 6. Togarma was the third son of Gomer. And Beth, at the beginning of this Hebrew compound word, literally means house or place of. So it simply means the house or the place of Togarma. And it probably has reference to a city that in modern Turkey is known as Tegarma, T-E-G-A-R-M-A. Now, it's interesting that four of the ancient locations that Ezekiel gives are found today in the Islamic nation of Turkey: Meshek, Tubal, Gomer, and Tagarma. Clearly, God seems to be emphasizing Turkey's part in this end-time coalition. And I just bring that up because some might question this, because Turkey is more moderate than some of the other nations. But that evidently is going to change, because according to God's word, they will be a part of this end-time alliance. And in recent years, there has been an increase in the expression of radical Islam in Turkey, which advocates the establishment of a Turkish Islamic Republic, opposition to Israel, and is committed to the worldwide spread and rule of Islam. Now, there are also some other unnamed nations here. We've identified all the nations that are listed by name, but it appears there will be additional nations who will take part in this invasion that are not mentioned by name. At the end of Ezekiel chapter 38 and verse 6, we're told that there will be these other unnamed countries that will join in the attack of Israel. Look at what it says. It says, "The many nations with you." There are many other Muslim nations that surround Israel. Some are more moderate politically and religiously, but will no doubt move willingly or be moved or be pressured into moving by radical Islam. As a matter of fact, that pressure is being carried out right now by ISIS, this new threat in the Middle East, and also other groups. And some of the countries that are there are Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Syria, and Jordan. Now, many of those very nations are right now already in a state of change as their governments are being challenged or as they're being changed. Some as a result of the so-called Arab Spring. Egypt recently deposed President Hosni Mubarak, who had maintained peaceful relations with Israel all the years of his presidency. The Associated Press, in an article called "Arab Anger at Their Government Grows," says, quote, "As their anger against Israel and America swells, protesters across the Middle East are also increasingly venting their frustration at their Arab rulers, especially in moderate countries whose governments have been reliable U.S. allies," end quote. All right, so we have seen the invader's identity. We've seen the invader's allies. Let's talk about the invader's agenda. And we're not going to get through this tonight. We're just going to look at a couple of points here in this, and then the rest of it we'll have to deal with next week. But first of all, and this is very important, first of all, as we look at this, the period. When is this going to take place? Well, in verse 8, Ezekiel says, "after many days." In other words, not in Ezekiel's time, which is what some would have us to believe, that this is just all part of history, they say, and that it's happened long ago. But the text tells us that this is going to be in the future from Ezekiel's time, that this is going to be in the latter days. This prophecy occurs at the end of the seven-year tribulation and in conjunction with the events that we just observed in Revelation chapter 19. As a matter of fact, you're going to see as we go on through these chapters this week and next week, you're going to see some very strong similarities in the description of these events with those that we have seen thus far in the book of Revelation. So the period is at the end of the seven-year tribulation. And then, not only the period, but the people. Who is it that's going to be attacked? Look again in verse 8. "After many days, you will be called to arms. In future years, you will invade a land." He's talking to these Russian and Islamic nations. "In future years, you'll invade a land that has recovered from war, whose people were gathered from many nations to the mountains of Israel, which had long been desolate. They had been brought out from the nations, and now all of them live in safety." Now, who's that talking about? People gathered from many nations. Well, it tells us whose people, it says, were gathered from many nations to the mountains of Israel. Who's that? Well, I'll tell you who it wasn't talking about. It's not talking about the church. It's very obviously and very literally talking about the Jews. The dispersion, called the diaspora, the dispersion of the Jews throughout the world began in 722 BC with the capture of the northern tribes of Israel and their captivity in Assyria. And those tribes never returned. In 605 BC, the southern kingdom of Judah was taken captive into Babylon. After 70 years, a remnant returned to the homeland, but many who were born in Babylon during those years and grew up as a part of that culture remained there. Alexander the Great further expanded the dispersion of God's people by using them to populate his captured cities. And in AD 70, when Titus the Roman general conquered Jerusalem and destroyed the temple, the remaining majority of the people of Israel scattered throughout the world, still surviving as a people and still suffering century after century after century of persecution. But on May the 14th and 15th, 1948, after maintaining their identity for nearly 2,000 years without a country of their own, the Hebrew people reestablished their borders and the nation of Israel was born again in a day. And since that day, Israel has been hated by the Arab people more than ever before. Why? Because they claim the land that had been promised to them by God. Now, you would think, after all of this, that Israel as a whole would be grateful to God. You would think that they would acknowledge the God of their fathers and His hand in their restoration. You would think that the nation would be on its face before God, attributing their great victories to Him and worshiping Him. But that is not the case. Notice something else that is said there in verse 8. He says, "And now all of them live in safety." The New American Standard says, "And they are living securely." Now what's that saying? Well, it's not saying what you think. The word that is translated safety or securely is from a Hebrew root that means confident, careless, complacent. That describes Israel perfectly. They have become overconfident, arrogant, and conceited. Several years ago, I visited Israel, Brendan and I, and while I was there, I asked our guide, who was a Hebrew, to what he attributed the strength and the success that Israel had achieved. And I was young in the Lord, and I fully expected him to praise the Lord. I expected him to say, "Oh, God has blessed Israel in such a wonderful way, and to give me this great testimony." But do you know what he said? He told me that it was all because of the superiority and the technological superiority of the Israeli people. There are Orthodox Jews, of course, who live in Israel and who understand that God's hand is on them and that they owe their presence there to Him. But as a whole, the Judaism of Israel is moderate at best, and they are dwelling arrogantly in their land. That's what Ezekiel said. Now, we're going to have to end this first part of this message here, and we'll finish it next week. But as we do, I would like to draw a little application for you and begin to prepare you for something that we're going to learn next week. I want you to see the similarity between the nation of Israel and the people of America. America is the greatest nation on the face of the earth. And we have been blessed above any other. We have unprecedented freedoms. We can drive from one corner of the United States to the other without a passport or any documentation. We have the right to vote for those and choose those who represent us in leadership in our country. We have wealth far beyond the wildest imaginations of the people of the rest of the world. Even the poorest American is rich by comparison to those in most other countries. We have freedom of worship. We can go to the church of our choice, and if not Christians, they can go to the synagogue, they can go to the mosque, they can go to the temple. And you would think, would you not, that America would be humbly on its face before God in gratitude for all that He has done. That it would forsake its sin and follow wholeheartedly the teaching of the Bible. But you would be wrong. Because just like Israel, America gives only lip service to the God who has blessed us so. And America is also living arrogantly in its land. And next week, we're going to see what may be the only reference in the Bible to the United States. But I got to tell you, you're not going to like it. So, until next time, let's go to the Lord.